Stay tuned after the show for a message from Nokia.
To understand the anti-vaccine movement in Sacramento and in California, you probably need to know about the final day of the session last year when we were sitting in the Senate and what you could only describe as sort of a blood bomb was tossed down onto the Senate floor.
We will not have any disruption in the chamber.
Blood splashed lawmakers right in front of us.
Sergeants.
And that was sort of the height of the anti-vaccine protests. I'm Mackenzie Mays. I'm a reporter for Politico California. Now those anti-vaccine activists are anti-mask activists, and the arguments are sort of overlapping with bodily autonomy and constitutional rights and personal rights. They've said unfounded statistics about, you know, masks and the impacts of childhood breathing capabilities and things like that. They think even masks are dangerous.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today, how anti-maskers became the new anti-vaxxers.
At a recent hearing in the assembly here in Sacramento on schools reopening, there were these same parents.
The science is that the cardiovascular system of a 5 and 6 year old is not fully developed.
And you could tell that these parents recognized these lawmakers and vice versa.
Do you wish to comment?
This is my comment, standing here. You see it on my shirt, make pharma liable again.
Some of the parents were wearing shirts that said, make big pharma liable again, or I don't want a flu shot. But they weren't there to talk about vaccines. They were there to talk about masks.
The science is that facial coverings, prolonged use of facial coverings, restrict the airflow and cause for reduced oxygen levels in the blood.
They certainly mentioned the potential for a coronavirus vaccine that they are worried that their children will have to enroll in school again once there is a vaccine. But in the meantime, until there is one, they're speaking out about masks. They were saying that they were worried that their children won't be able to breathe correctly with a mask on. They talk about fear of contagion that they think is an overreaction that can be detrimental to students' mental health. These parents are also worried about an ability to socialize. One anti-vaccine advocate was in this hearing and had actually counted how many times lawmakers touched their mask or touched their face. And her point was sort of that adults are struggling to follow these mask rules. So how can we expect children to follow them once we're back in school?
So this is coming to a head in California, but I mean, this argument over masks, it's something we're seeing across the country, right?
Yeah, it's definitely national. And what's really interesting is that there's no clear political divide. So some of these anti-vaccine critics are liberals and some are conservatives. It's more of an anti-government issue that we're looking at. So it's not really red or blue. And we saw that when the anti-vaccine movement was at a head last year. Now we're seeing it as an anti-mask, anti-stay-at-home order, sort of don't tell us what to do vibe. And that doesn't always line up with liberal or conservative.
For some people, I know this is obvious, but the guidance from experts is to wear masks, right?
Yeah, the guidance on masks is pretty clear, pretty undebatable. We know in the beginning that we weren't so sure how effective they would be, but now the CDC says anybody over 2 years old should wear a mask to protect yourself and to potentially protect others. Here in California, you're not really allowed in any establishment without a mask on, and that's something new. There are certainly adults in the room who are skeptical, like teachers who say, you know, try being in a room with kids all day and get them to listen to wearing their masks. Even pediatricians have said, you know, we don't know how effective this is going to be, but not because of, you know, any debate about wearing a mask or any concern about health impacts on wearing a mask. It's more like kids are, you know, really excited and to get back to normal. And we don't know if they'll know to not pull their mask down or something like that. But it's pretty clear that masks are the way to go. You can't get on an airplane nowadays without a mask. The problem is we don't know how we can get kids to listen, and we don't know what parents will do if you stop kids at the door in the fall and say, you cannot get in here without a mask. You know, teachers and principals and superintendents are really worried about that sort of extra layer of stress that that might cause.
Do schools have guidance on this?
So there's lots of guidance for schools on this, but not a lot of requirements. And that's kind of what is the biggest issue for schools right now. In California, we have language from the Department of Public Health and the Department of Education that says, we highly encourage you to wear masks, students included. But there's no one really saying you must wear a mask in order to attend a public school. There are a few states that are saying more effectively and more sternly, yes, you have to wear a mask, but a lot of states are leaving it up to local districts. And usually local control is a great thing for schools to have. But right now, those schools feel like they're open up to so much liability because they can't have a more black and white answer. They want to be able to say, to point at the governor, you know, as who is at fault, or to point at the feds even and say, hey, listen, every school in the country must wear masks, but right now it's very local, it's very much a patchwork, and I think that's where a lot of the concerns are for schools.
So with this patchwork, it sounds like a lot of the responsibility might end up falling on teachers. Have you talked to any teachers about how they're preparing to deal with this come fall when school returns?
Yeah, I have talked to teachers. I know teachers unions are really focused on getting PPE for themselves. You know, they're worried about, we know that the virus is worse for adults than children. And there are a lot of questions about how much children can actually spread it to adults. And then so teachers are not only worried about themselves, but worried about maybe taking it back home to their families after working all day. And then the whole other complication is, you know, I've talked to teachers who are preparing for what they do if a student refuses to wear a mask, especially an older student who can sort of maybe echo these anti-vaccine criticisms that they've heard, or have family members who think that this is a violation of their rights. I talked to one teacher based in Fresno who compared it to teaching about evolution. You know, when he teaches evolution, he has families and students and parents who might take issue with that and point to their religious beliefs. And it's become so politicized that he's sort of using those experiences to prepare for how to talk to someone about wearing a mask, which for a lot of people is really absurd because this mask is a public health order, but it's become so much more than that.
What do you think this debate tells us about where our country is politically and culturally?
I think it's no secret that the country is divided in so many ways, and it feels like our crisis has a crisis. You know, we're seeing people protest over Black Lives Matter, over police brutality, over the coronavirus, over reopening the economy. It just seems like what maybe in more normal times would be simply a public health order to protect people now feels like a threat, you know, a violation of rights, and another reason to engage politically. And I'm not so sure that that would happen 10 years ago or even less than that. It's just the country is in a really different place now.
Mackenzie Mays, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Also today, voters in Oklahoma have narrowly approved a measure to extend Medicaid to at least 200,000 low-income adults. The vote, which passed with just 50.5% support, makes Oklahoma the first state in the country to expand government-backed health insurance since the coronavirus pandemic began and stripped many people of their coverage. The measure could also set back a Trump administration effort to make Oklahoma a test case for its plan to transform the entitlement program into a block grant, which is a longtime goal of conservatives. Oklahoma is now the fifth state where voters have defied Republican leaders to expand Medicaid at the ballot box. Missouri will hold a similar vote later this summer. And in a surprising move, the Senate has agreed to extend the small business rescue program created months ago as the coronavirus pandemic shuttered businesses across the country. Last night, just hours before the program was set to close down with $130 billion left unspent, Senators passed legislation to keep the program alive, letting the Small Business Administration continue approving Paycheck Protection Program loans, which can be turned into grants until August 8th. Since the program began, the SBA has approved more than $520 billion of aid through nearly 4.9 million loans. To keep the loans flowing, the House would need to pass the legislation and send it to President Trump for his signature. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts. And to stay up on all of our latest coverage of the coronavirus pandemic, sign up for the Politico Nightly Newsletter. You can do that at politico.com/newsletters. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.
We are in an era of discovery where today's tech breakthroughs keep our country strong for the future. As a leader in American innovation, Nokia helps drive 5G and push progress for our nation. Powered by the iconic Nokia Bell Labs, Nokia continues to accelerate the future of U.S. connectivity by delivering solutions both from and for America. Learn more at nokia.com/opentomore.